Ladies and gentlemen, get ready to embark on a journey like no other. Welcome to the Glum Lot Podcast,
your go-to destination for a unique blend of recovery and discovery.
I'm Brett.
And I'm Mark. And in this podcast, we will endeavor to create a safe and uplifting space for our guests and listeners to share their stories with sincerity and a touch of humor.
Remember, we are not a glum lot. The Glum Lot Podcast is more than just a source of entertainment. It's a beacon of hope, proving that even in the darkest moments, recovery is possible. Every story we share carries the power to inspire positive change.
So buckle up, get ready to listen, and join us in discovering the strength that lies within every individual's journey. This is the Glum Lot Podcast, where humor meets hope. Okay, we are on episode number 28 of the Glum Lot Podcast. We are glad you are listening, aren't
Indeed.
We, Brett?
Indeed.
Yes, we are. And we also want to remind everybody to join our Facebook group.
Yeah, whatever it
that's
is.
That's better.
Yeah.
At the Glum Lot Podcast Facebook group on Facebook. And if you want to email us, you can email us your thoughts, opinions, ideas.
Keep the opinions to yourself.
Yeah. At the Glum Lot Podcast at gmail.com. So, with that in mind, what is on your mind today, Mr. Brett?
So, we've been pretty busy with the podcast, and it's been awesome.
Yeah.
Right? You know, great results. You know, we've heard lots of good stories about people hearing good things and, you know, lots of unintended things, too, that are just amazing.
Mm-hmm. Downloaded all over the world.
Yeah. I mean, geez, we could go on for another, long time. But anyways, so one thing, though, that I have to be careful of is going too far with, you know, it's important to still do my meetings.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah. And one thing I learned early on is that meeting makers make it.
Yep, that is true.
And so, you know, even when new exciting things come around and we, you know, as I know this alcoholic goes all in, right?
Yep, and you know, that could be a job. It could be a relationship.
Anything.
It could be a hobby, a sport.
Yeah.
Anything. And, you know, what's so important and so not natural for us is balance.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we are the people that want more.
Oh, yes.
If this is good, more must be better.
Absolutely. This could become an addiction, too.
Right. And that's not always the case.
Yeah.
Usually, when we find balance, we find serenity. But when we are out of balance, that's when we need to take a look at what's going on in our lives,
yeah,
and maybe back off some things, increase some other things, but it's all about balance.
And I am learning that as we speak.
Yeah. Yeah. Your wife is probably teaching that to you, right?
Who's she?
Another podcast? Jeez. Doesn't that guy ever
My kids
you...
are enjoying their new dad. That's cool.
Are they right? Yeah. So, yeah, it's exciting and fun, and, you know, we're building this thing, and that's great, and... But we got to be careful.
I got to remember my roots.
Yep.
Yeah. Definitely have to remember my roots. So I intend to do that.
Good. Good. You should.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm gonna.
Well, there you go. Hey, our guest today is another person you and I don't know.
Then I guess I shouldn't ask.
What?
Do I know them?
No, you don't know them.
Okay.
Her, I should say.
Oh,
young,
nice.
A young girl. We love to hear from the young people. Brett and I are I'm not young at all. Brett's still a little young. But we got to have young people, man. Got to keep the fresh blood here and hear their experiences. They have them share with their strengths and their hope. And that's what it's all about, you know?
Heck yeah.
So let's welcome Allison.
Allison!
Welcome to the Glum Lot Podcast, Allison.
Hi.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey, let's start out with your sobriety date.
It is April 24th, 2018.
April 24th, 2018. Okay. See, Brett's going to do the math, so by the end of the show, he'll tell us how long it's been.
We're getting to 6 years.
We are.
Very nice. Years.
Do awesome. You, let's bring you back to the days gone by. Do you remember your first encounter with alcohol?
The details.
Oh, yes.
Oh, do tell. It sounds juicy.
I was 7, and my grandparents, I used to hang out there a lot, and they would play, you know, pitch and rummy against each other.
Great game.
And I would just kind of hang with them, and they would drink some highballs, and I said, that looks kind of fun. And
fix me up one of them grams.
My grandma went outside for something, and I picked up her lit cigarette and picked up the half of her drink, and there was this really tall mirror in her hallway. It was like this old antique-looking mirror. And I like went and looked at myself and took a sip and took a puff and, you know, I was like, I have arrived.
You're grown up.
Look at you.
Yeah.
You should have been wearing a ball gown.
Should have gone right to, should have gone right to selling Avon.
I'm pretty sure I was wearing dirty play clothes, but.
So, did you drink the drink?
I had about a quarter of it, but I liked it. And I kind of snuck it back, on the table.
Did you feel any effect from it?
No, but okay. I knew that I enjoyed it, and I couldn't wait to be able to freely do it. My first drunk was a little bit later on. I was 14 for my first drunk. I found an old duffel bag in the woods that was full of Piss Warm Utica Club.
Yum, yum.
So if that's any indication of desperation, that was it.
Mm. Well, when you're 14, it's like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And here you are back at the woods again.
Jackpot.
Back in the woods.
Boy, if there was no woods, there'd be no alcoholics.
There'd be no alcoholics. Yeah,
so you drank that
with
a friend? Or
with a friend, yes.
And you caught a buzz.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were rolling around in the back lawn laughing and just we had a great time.
You enjoyed it.
I sure did.
And did you want to do it again after that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And did you?
It was on. Oh, I did, actually, as a matter of fact. I know. It's mind-blowing. Mind-blowing.
Yeah. So did it progress at all?
Oh, yeah. So the progression was pretty slow for me. And, you know, it was your normal high school drinking.
Right.
Just weekends. I was high as a kite every day, but I didn't.
So you smoked
drink.
Weed?
I smoked weed every day, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You're like a lot like Dr. Dre, right? Smoke weed every day.
Yeah, we're like the same, actually.
Yeah, I know. When you walked in, I'm like, goddamn, Dre
is
here.
Yeah, I know.
Dre's doing the show.
Sometimes people see me at Costco and they're like, Dr. Dre? And I'm like, no.
I'm Nurse Dre.
It's not me.
So it is a progressive disease.
Absolutely.
And so when did you first start feeling like, I'm going to do this a lot more?
I would say as soon as I graduated high school, I did my, you know, normal weekend drinking and then high school, you know, I moved and then, you know, started going to school and I basically just had no responsibility. It felt like, I mean, I was going to school, but it just,
like
I could
college?
Do whatever I want. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Were you living at home or living at the school?
No, I had moved. It was about an hour and a half from my hometown.
Okay.
And I just, it slowly picked up. But I would say it really didn't progress until about, I would say, 9 years after that,
okay.
Where it was
so
an everyday thing.
You were basically just a college drinker and then
a little more than that.
Yeah,
like I
a heavy
had,
college drinker.
Yeah, like I had the house parties in high school and I like I was definitely the party girl. It wasn't this
did you ever get in trouble?
Oh yeah. One time I was at a dance at the school the next town over and I had a house party going on. I said, guys, I'll be right back. And the cops came when I was at the party and I came back from the dance and I was like, okay, so we're still going to party, I would assume, right? And my friends were all crying and I didn't care.
Did you walk in and say, what? Who's throwing a party in my house? What the hell? What's going on here?
But yeah, no, it was.
So along the way, there are some consequences.
Oh, yeah, just little
nothing
ones.
Nothing insane.
Early on.
Right?
No.
Still smoking weed?
Still smoking weed.
Any
yeah.
other drugs?
No. I was actually afraid of other drugs because I thought I would become unmanageable. I had a really good, you know, hang on this thing. And I was taught early on, you know, don't turn into an asshole when you're drinking. Don't lose your license. Don't lose your job. There is, you know, no bailing you out of either of those. And I believed that and I knew that was true.
Okay. So I'm guessing things changed a bit. Further on down the line.
Yes. I got married. I thought that would calm me down, but he liked to drink as well.
Mm.
I basically, you know, married a party buddy, and we kind of lived this life where we would just go, we'd go all over the place. We'd go to concerts about, you know, a few times a week. We would just, like, live that lifestyle and spend a lot of money, and it got a little hostile between the two of us on several occasions, and he had some consequences legally that made him want to stop drinking. And I was like, well, that sucks. You have an alcohol problem. good thing I don't have one of those. And
so he stopped?
He stopped. He went dry. And
that's got to be brutal.
Dove right into work, like many of us do.
Mm-hmm. And, like a workaholic type?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I continued with my lifestyle, and, you know, I was a bar drinker. I'd go to the bar every day after work. I had very flexible work hours, and I still do.
Now, did he get into a program, or
no.
Did he just cut it off?
No, just cut it right off.
Okay.
Yeah. Had some shame, guilt, and remorse like we all get, mm-hmm. and just that was enough for him to stop.
He kept busy with work.
So where does that leave you?
That leaves me without my drinking buddy and at the bar. I lived like that for about 2 years where I would go to the bar 4 o'clock, get home at like 11. So
did you dread going home?
Because
he knew he wasn't drinking? Like,
we didn't really have much of a relationship. We looked really great on paper because we both had like these sick abandonment needs fulfilled for each other. It was like the less, you know, he was around, the better, and vice versa. It was almost like we had somebody, but we were both really emotionally unavailable. So it was kind of perfect until it wasn't. Yeah, but eventually.
So does your drinking ramp up during this time?
No, actually, it stayed pretty consistent, and I had this really good cocktail of weed and alcohol. I was, you know, 110 pounds soaking wet. I didn't eat, and I just saved all my, I mean, I ate a little bit, obviously, I had to survive, but I was holding on to my drinking in every way I could. But,
didn't want to spoil it.
Yeah.
Did you see that as a problem yet or no?
No, not at all.
All right. So you feel your life is very manageable.
I feel like it's becoming unmanageable, but I'm doing everything I can to hold on to it. You know, okay. I'm like, this isn't normal, but it feels like it's working. But I knew deep in my heart that it was going to come crashing down someday. I just didn't know how or when or what was going to happen.
How old are you at this point?
I was about 27, 28.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you find that you're drinking more than your friends? Or?
Oh, yeah. They're all, you know, we had just gotten married, and I'm still ready to party, and my friends are all also getting married around that time. They're having kids. They're
settling
down, and that appalled me. Like, the idea of having a child and
what
not
are you doing.
Yeah.
Already?
Are you out of your mind?
Yeah, I was just like, how? And I was not going to be that type of person. You know, I had this judgment of, you know, drinking while pregnant, and you know, I love the women of AA that have gone through that drink through pregnancy. It's not like I have any sort of judgment by any mm-hmm. means, but I was just not willing to do that, and so I said to hell with it. I said to hell with it. I'm not having kids. And
so, did this relationship come to an end at some point?
Oh yeah, I had that whole, you know, like it says in the big book, where we're, you know, we go to that person we feel like we can relate to, and turns out I related to somebody that was just like me, a big bag of shit, you know. I always held my head high on some level in that time point, because I didn't physically ever cheat. I just had this like emotional affair for the last 2 months, and I just vanished one day. I said, I'm out of here. And it was coming to an end, and we fought a lot. Mm-hmm. But there really wasn't much of a marriage. It was, you know.
So you got out?
Yes.
And you go out on your own?
Yes. And I had worked really hard to, we had just recently, a couple years before, bought a lake house in my hometown, and I was so, you know, enmeshed in that relationship, or the new one, and this was where it got really ugly, where I was just all day, every day, and well, I shouldn't say all day. I was above drinking in the morning when I had work days, because, you know, I just never wanted to go there. I was running like 3 miles a day every morning, just to like run off the booze and to prove to myself that I was an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm. So you were a healthy alcoholic.
I sure was.
I'm a fitaholic.
Yeah, I was just like a lunatic, though. You know, I had no program, and I'm still drinking, obviously. So.
Yeah, so you're drinking and you're experiencing a lot of the ism.
For sure.
And
alcoholism. And does something come to a head with this whole way of life for you?
Yeah, so I realize what's going on. You know, I had signed over my the ownership of the lake house, and I just didn't ask any questions. I felt so bad about, I just wanted out. Mm-hmm. And then I quickly just felt so bad about what I was doing. I was like, what is going on? And of course, this person, you know, lived in Florida, and we're in New York State. The person that left my ex-husband for, and he had like moved up, and I was like, you got to get the hell out of here. Like, this is not working. So he's like, what do you mean? I just quit my job. I just, all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm sorry. It's not happening. But I just was seeing a mirror image of myself. This person was also, you know, just a degenerate like I was. Just a hot mess. And I just was terrified of where my life was heading. And it was not where I wanted to be.
So what happened?
I detoxed on my couch like an asshole.
By alone?
Oh, yeah.
Mm. What was that like?
It was awful.
Yeah.
I was so uneducated and in complete denial of my disease. I didn't realize how bad I was, and it was horrendous.
You didn't reach out to anybody at that point?
I reached out to my ex. He kind of took care of me a little bit, and but there was no reconciliation there. Mm-hmm.
At some point, did you think about going to an AA meeting?
No. Like, no.
Rehab,
I was just
no.
Like, yeah, I just, any thought, I just thought I was going to give it up because it's ruined my life. But I was like, I'm not that bad, you know?
So your plan was, I'm going to stop drinking.
Yes.
I know it's not going to be easy. I have to detox
yes.
myself out of this. And then I'm just not going to drink again.
Right. I'm just going to live my life the way I did, and I'm going to be just fine.
And how did that work for you? I'm guessing it did not work out so well.
It was not great.
And, you know, the funny thing is your ex-husband's there, and he did that. He basically
that's it. And that
had
was
issues,
probably,
and he
so
just
I
stopped. And
you
figure, I'll do the same thing.
Yeah, I can
right.
do that.
Right.
So what did happen, though?
Well, I picked up a hobby of cereal dating.
You're dating, like, Captain Crunch and
no,
Count Chocula?
Like, S-E-R.
You have to forget
I-A-L.
What is cereal?
It's like a corny,
dating?
Dad joke.
I am a dad. I'm a dad of six, and I do make corny dad
awesome.
Jokes. You got me.
Take that.
Well, I just was like, what am I going to do with all my time? So I'll just
one after the other.
You know, do some dinners here and there.
So you're seeing a whole bunch of dudes.
Yeah, nothing crazy, nothing serious. Yeah. Just like, let's have this dinner.
You're basically taking up your time with
right.
this stuff, right?
Right.
But you're not drinking?
No.
Okay.
No.
You're not smoking weed?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. Well.
I was in complete disgust with myself from that. So
did the dating make you feel better in some way?
No. It was very short-lived, but I did happen to meet someone that was in the program.
On one of your dates?
Yes.
No shit.
So
did he talk about it?
Not really, but he kept saying all these things that were super, you know, spiritual, but not really super spiritual. It was in a way of just, he seemed like he was at peace with his life and he had some wisdom. And
so weird.
It was so weird because he was like, where do you want to meet? And he was, I was like, I don't know. And he was like, how about Starbucks? And at that point I was like, coffee drinkers are lame and I'm not interested in that, but okay, he's kind of cute and that's fine. So I get there and, you know, we're just drinking coffee. I didn't even know what to order. And I knew this guy didn't have a car. I had a feeling he had some issues with drinking. And
DWIs and whatnot. And
yeah, I just had this gut feeling. So when it was time to leave, I was like, I'm going to use the bathroom, but it was nice meeting you. But I lied and kind of like lurked around the corner and I wanted to watch him not get into a car. And he just kept walking. I'm like, uh-huh.
There's a lot of good words you used in there. I was lurking. Yeah. I was lurking. I wanted him to watch him not get in a car.
Yeah.
And it came true.
Yeah. And
so, well, what did you do when he walked out?
Well, I just was like, well, he's nice, but I don't know if I'm that bad.
Like, dude, where's his car?
Yeah.
Little judgy.
So I end up actually going back to some casual drinking on the weekends. It was only 3 weeks of it.
Now, when you approached that in your mind, did you say, well, I haven't drank in a long time. I'll probably be fine.
Yeah, it was a really long time. It was about 5 weeks.
Okay.
So
that's
forever. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I was like, you know, I can handle it. And I think about what it's like to go without a meeting and I start getting crazy. Like, holy shit, the week I was just on a rampage. I wanted to like murder everyone
crawling
that even looked at
skin.
Me. Yeah, I just, and then I was getting these crazy blackouts and.
You were drinking to blackout?
I was drinking to blackout, yeah, because I just said I was going to do it on the weekend. So I
so
was.
Made it worthwhile.
Yeah. And towards the end of my drinking before that, you know, I was just like, when I'd get home, I would fall on the floor all the time. I would just, I wouldn't have recollection of that. But I would get in like a lot of fights. I got like thrown out of the dome once. I'd get in a lot of fist fights. Yeah.
Can we just talk about that a little more?
I got thrown out of the dome.
I need a little more than just being thrown out of the dome.
Ugh.
The dome, for the listener that doesn't know, it's a sports complex.
Yeah.
Big, very big, 50,000 people sports complex.
Local to us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So kicked out of the dome.
Yeah, there was some drama going on. We're all.
Did you rush the court?
No,
I
was in the nosebleeds, and it
but
was
drunk,
causing nosebleeds.
Yeah, it was for football. So, no, my ex brother in law, like we were hitting the hard liquor. That was a couple years before I stopped drinking. That was when I said, "Oh, it's the liquor that's getting me."
Oh yes.
Yeah, so that was when I stopped drinking liquor.
What'd you go to?
I went to McUltra.
Oh, yeah, it's low carb.
How responsible.
I know.
Yeah. You didn't go back to Piss Warm Music Club.
2.1 carbs.
I know. It's such a weak, pathetic drink of choice for an alcoholic, but I was trying desperately to manage it. I would drink, you know, I would drink like a 12-pack of Ultras every day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But it was.
Drinking. I did the same thing when I did a low carb diet, right? And I was like, totally justifying the diet beer. And I put my big mitt around that thing. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
But then I was just like, dang. Yeah. Just throwing them out.
So, does it develop into more than weekends after a while?
Yes. So, well, no. It was only 3 weeks. And then I got suicidal after a really bad night.
You're in a dark place.
Yeah. I didn't know what to do. It was
that because you just were really realizing how bad this was?
Yeah, and I just kept making more bad decisions, and I just felt, you know, those like depressing hangovers too. Like it's a depressant. Like some of them you wake up and you're just, it's like a debilitating, depressing hangover.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, you probably had expectations that, you know, I am a certain person. I'm a good person.
I also had this expectation that, you know, my ex is the problem. Like, it's not me. He's the problem.
Oh, he caused all this.
Well, no, we just didn't click. So for me to get rid of that relationship, I'm going to find a new one and click with them, and I'm going to be happy. So
gotcha.
I came to that realization really quickly that I am the issue. It didn't take long. It took about 4 months, 5 months after I had left him.
And you felt bad about that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So you're in a dark place, and you say you're feeling suicidal.
Yes.
Right? Did you act upon that?
No.
Good.
No. Okay. I was a little bit of a baby when it came to that. Like, I just had some deep Catholic
fear. But if you're thinking it, it's pretty dark.
I mean,
pretty isolated and
so
dark.
So what did you do?
Well, I went back to the Starbucks guy, and I said, you know, I'm interested in whatever you got going on. I asked him point blank, actually, because we didn't really talk about it. I never said, do you not drink or anything like that. I just knew. I had this like gut feeling.
What makes you you?
Yeah. And I said, I have a question to ask you. Are you an AA? And he was like, I am. And I was like, huh. And it was like seeing, I don't know. I've never seen somebody sober before in my entire life. Like my, we don't have enough time for it, but my, both sides of my family have alcoholism, and it's pretty bad, I feel. But like a lot of us, that's the case. Some of us, it isn't. But I grew up with the ism for sure, and my mom didn't necessarily pick up the drink, but she definitely had that para-alcoholism where she had that, you know, rage and aggression and the control.
Yeah, it's just a way of being.
Yeah.
It can be very negative. So you start talking to this dude about AA.
Yeah.
Does he suggest a meeting for you?
Yeah, so he hooked me up with this woman, and I went to a couple meetings with her.
Did you raise your hand and say this is my first meeting?
I did.
Nice.
And I, of course, got really, you know, put together, wanted to make sure they knew that I was a put-together alcoholic. So, you know, I put makeup on and did my hair.
You want to look good.
Yeah. Like, I'm not a mess.
Hell,
you know
what
I mean? I'm not having a hard time. I'm just checking this thing out. I'm fine, though.
Yep.
So, yeah, I raised my hand, and I was super judgmental, didn't want what anyone had, and also was just super terrified of asking for help. I grew up really self-sufficient. I was an only child. I was, you know, the result of a teenage pregnancy that, you know, they split up when I was 4, and they were, you know, 20 years old. And I just felt like I needed to take care of things myself. And
as they're going around the room, though, and sharing, were you hearing parts of your story and the way you felt? And so you could relate.
I could definitely relate. But the whole concept of not knowing the steps, not knowing the traditions, not knowing anything, like my ego really made me feel like it was impossible to reach out. And just my fear of people in general. Like,
did you read the Big Book at all?
Not initially.
Okay.
So I go do this thing dry by myself. I go to 2 meetings, and I go to Starbucks guy, and you know, he's got like 4 years, 5 years at that point, and that's enough for me. I'm gonna just get sober by osmosis. He's sober, you know. So like eventually he becomes without his intention or mine, or without my awareness, my only friend, my sponsor, my higher power, my only source of socialization. And it was really not the healthiest relationship at all, because I had zero foundation and zero sense of self, but I was working a lot. I became like a crazy gym rat. And
you weren't drinking, though?
I was not drinking.
Okay.
And eventually, I had to have this surgery done, and I wasn't able to work, and I wasn't able to go to the gym. Mm.
You got a lot of time on your hands.
Yeah.
It's not good.
That was...
a lot of thinking time.
Yes. Those were my outlets at this point now. That was all I had. And this guy. So I start to go batshit, shocker. And he breaks up with me because I'm...
Oh, you were actually in a relationship with this
guy?
Yeah,
we end up getting in a relationship.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. I like...
Were you living together or anything? Or
no.
Just... Okay.
No.
But he was your dude and you saw him every day and you relied on him for emotional support and...
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
Pretty
and like you much. Say, he became a de facto sponsor?
Yeah, mm. Pretty much.
Higher power, too.
Yeah. It
yeah.
was just...
Ooh, that's dangerous.
Yeah.
It was awful. But it kept me sober long enough to know it was possible.
It kept
even...
you away from the drink
and
anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And I also really liked the way he lived his life and presented. He had this, like, peace to him. And he carried the message in a way that it made it look good. And I also had zero way to blame him for anything. Because he really did practice, you know, pause and, like, just general kindness.
Humility.
Yeah. He wasn't... I never was able to blame him on, like,
but
for
his,
anything.
The way he lived was attractive to you.
Yeah.
You said,
so,
I want that, right?
Yeah. So when we broke up, I couldn't be like, oh, this is him. And, you know, like I did with my ex-husband. I
right.
was
there was
just,
nothing there to.
Yeah. I was like, oh, this is because of this, this, and the other
so
thing.
So what did you do?
Well, I go back to the suicidal thoughts because I'm not going to drink. But I don't know how to live sober.
So you were in the hell of drinking, the hell of not drinking.
Exactly.
Mm.
So I went to the top of a parking garage and I stood on the edge. And that was my moment of desperation where, you know, I'm crying up there and I just said, God help me. And I got down and I said, all right, I'm going to try this AA shit, I guess. And I went to a couple meetings that day. Decided to go to ones close to my house because the first two I went to with that other woman, they were about 20 minutes away. Mm. I didn't want anybody to see me, you know, like, oh.
Right.
So you were fortunate to have them nearby.
Oh, yeah. Very fortunate.
Nice.
And I dove right in, and I was a stubborn little asshole, but I got the help I needed there.
Did you meet the right people?
I did. I think everybody is the right people if you... You know, depending on how you look at it.
Was it a little more believable this time because you'd interact with him so much?
What do you mean?
So you saw a certain way in him, right, because you had spent time.
Yes, yes.
And then your first time, you were like, eh. But the second time back, because you had, you know, seen a lot more of what he had, and then when you were listening to the people, was it a little more clear this
yeah.
time?
Yeah, and I was also just completely desperate.
Yeah, that was it.
It
yeah.
was both. It mm. was definitely, you're right about it, but it was definitely both because yeah.
But that gift
I
of desperation, there's nothing like it.
Nothing.
You know, that breeds success in this program.
Yes, it does.
And if you're not desperate and you come in, your chances aren't really that
no,
good.
No,
because you'll think your way right out of it.
Well, you're going to get just enough to feel a little bit better, and then you're going to peace out and do whatever you want to do.
You'll be a little asshole.
Right. Yeah, when people that are new are coming in and they're crying, I'm like, fuck yes, like
yeah.
we have a shot.
Huge
right?
help. Yeah. So did you get a sponsor at this point? A
female
sponsor?
I asked like four women that day. I was just like, will you sponsor me? And like just, I didn't even know what a sponsor did or care, but I just was like.
Right. You just want to do what the people told you to
please,
do.
Please, yeah.
Wow.
Did you start working the steps, reading the book, doing the whole, going to meetings?
Yep,
and...
I went to meetings. I would go to like two minimal a day, I would say on average.
Nice.
I would go to the morning meeting. I had to get my head straight before work. That was huge for me. And I would go after work, and then I would talk to my sponsor.
Was it a problem keeping the drink down or no?
It was. I would, you know, pray really hard. I was a mess for the first few months. I was crying and praying constantly.
Were steps two and three easy for you?
No. Oh, my God.
So you came in with an attitude of like, look, I just want to quit drinking.
Yes.
This whole God thing.
No.
How'd you know how to pray?
I just did what I was told. I was... faking it until I made it, I guess.
Okay. Ooh, nice. A lot of people do that.
I read,
until you come to some kind of an understanding, of God of your understanding.
Right.
Sometimes it's just the group.
Right. And it was at that point. It really started with good orderly direction for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of my actions were so fear-based before I came in and so self-centered. So my sponsor basically taught me to pause anytime I would open my mouth almost and just, is this self-seeking? Is this fear-based? What would a good person do?
Wow.
And I would have to ask myself that every time I took action because I really, everything that came out of my mouth, I was so manipulative and just I wanted what was best for me. Nobody wants more for me than me. So
did there come a point at which you felt that psychic change starting that we talk about?
Yeah. I would say it wasn't until later on. Like my life has just become gradually way better. Like this last weekend at the convention, it was just amazing. I had some pretty amazing things happen there, but I would say it's been a slow change. I didn't have that burning bush or anything
right.
like that. But I definitely did have a couple of
great
awakenings.
You went through the steps with a sponsor.
Yes.
Right? And 4 and 5 help you?
No. 4 and 5 at first.
I like
I
your
love
response.
The freaking
no.
honesty. It's
no.
just like,
fuck 4
no.
and 5.
No. I couldn't wait. Like, well, 2 and 3, I barely even believed it. I was going through the motions, and I just had this insanely rigid sense of responsibility for everything. I had, like, the weight of the world on my shoulders, and I could not surrender to a higher power, but I was trying, and I couldn't wait to get to 4 because that's when I'm really going to do some work. I did not believe in a higher power at first, and I didn't really believe in powerlessness or see it quite yet. I'm glad I went through the steps quickly, but I also...
Yeah, but you can't really do a thorough 4 and 5.
But everybody also told you, you gotta do 4 and you'll be better.
I couldn't wait to just be like, this is why I turned out this way, and wah, wah, blah, blah. And I couldn't wait to just go on and on about how I turned out the way I did.
Huh. But so you basically just shimmy your way through these steps, right?
Well, yes, yes. And it wasn't until 6, it wasn't until 6 and 7 that I kept recreating disaster and wreckage that I was like, holy shit, I really need to go back here. I had to really get thrown back into 1 through 5.
Mm.
And I also was, because what really did it, I was taking matters into my own hands and really condemning myself for my bad behavior because I wanted to not be the way I was anymore, despite my way of not really doing the steps properly through 1 through 5 the first time. I really did want to be a better person. And anytime I would mess up, I would beat the hell out of myself and be like, you're a piece of shit. Excuse me. You're never going to get better. And essentially just turn into this like condemning, horrible person. I was not asking God for help. And I did that for about a year. And I was just...
You work with the same sponsor throughout this time?
No, I was kind of, I had a couple.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is anybody else like saying to you, look, you're kind of doing this wrong. The point of the program is not to beat the shit out of yourself.
Yes.
We need to back up and find out what you're missing.
It was more, she would tell me, you know, that's not the point, but I didn't really listen or know how to not be super cruel to myself. It was really hard.
Doing.
It was really hard for me because not only was it me taking my own will and doing it and not believing in God, but it was also a fun self-centered activity for me because I was still self-centered. So I was just working backwards with that.
So what changed?
Pride.
What changed that?
I hit a gift of desperation with each and every step, and specifically 6. I hit the little rock bottom that made me willing to work 1 through 6 on each of those steps. I had to kind of hit a bottom with all of them. It wasn't like I was like, let's do all of these. This is going to be great. Like I had to just be beaten down just like I did with the drink.
So you are motivated by pain.
For sure.
Yeah.
It's super unique, right?
Right. It is. You're the only one I've ever heard say that.
I know. I'm
so,
really
right, we're not
going to
move
unique.
Until it hurts.
But I don't hear many people say that 6 and 7 were a big deal. And I agree. I'm a huge proponent of 6 and 7. And this is why, and you're saying it right now. It's so neat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and for the uninitiated, we're talking about step 6 and step 7. And Brett is going to recite those for us.
No, I'm not.
Well, all right, then I will. 6 is that we were entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character, and 7 is that we humbly ask him to do so. Now, that being said,
I thought he was being smart.
It's easy to think that and then to say, okay, remove them.
Oh, yeah.
But it takes a lot of work.
To resolutely
it takes a
do
lot
it.
Of awareness, and usually have to keep doing it over and over and over and be determined that you're not going to give up on yourself.
Yeah, because
and
at
it's
that
very
point,
hard.
Yeah, at that point, you're starting to go on the spiritual side of the program.
Right. If
you
do
can't
6,
do that.
If you do 6 and 7, and you say, okay, let's do 8 now.
Oh.
You're missing something.
And you don't know why you're doing 8.
Yeah, and Brett recommends a book.
Yeah, Drop the Rock.
Drop the Rock.
Which,
are
not, you know,
yeah,
a
people
fan
love
of
it.
Hazelden, but I'll tell you, you know, if you just read the introduction of Drop the Rock, look it up, and man, it's powerful.
Did you read that book?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Drop the Rock's awesome.
Sure all right.
And
take
then
it easy.
The ripple effect. I'm just surprised people don't like it.
Oh, it came up this weekend.
Some people don't know it.
Yeah.
You know, they,
and
I
that's
mean,
why.
It's not a literature.
Investigation, right?
Yeah. So,
oh, whatever. That's just an excuse.
That's right.
To not read it.
You heard it here,
Alcoholism.
Folks. You heard it here from Allison. So you make this change. Every step changes you, and it's not just I'm going to do the step and change. It's like really coming from the gut.
Yeah.
It had to be earned.
It's coming from every orifice, really.
I don't know if I want to say every orifice, but
we're not a glum lot.
If you're comfortable with that, go on. So you're seeing success.
So
you're seeing
good.
Change.
No, no,
you're not.
No. I am seeing pain, and I'm seeing accountability, but I'm not going backwards. I know that I have to see these things. For it was the best, worst thing that's ever happened was seeing my part in things. It was so painful, and I that's what I mean by 6 and 7. I was so stuck and in so much pain, and I had no idea how to just be a better person. I was taking, you know, the advice from my sponsor about pausing, but I didn't always do that, you know?
You know, we talk about, especially, you know, with a lot of guests, we've talked about this too, but they talk about it a lot in meetings that we come into AA, we put the drink down, we don't know what to do. We
no.
don't know how to live. And so AA, the program, gives us a design for living.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very foreign to us.
But there is a lot of suffering in
yeah.
the game.
And you know what? And there's a ton of self-doubt.
Yep.
And there's a ton of doubting the program and doubting your higher power. And like you say, fake it till you make it. You really have to act your way into good living. You
right,
know?
Right.
You can't think your way into it because
right.
it doesn't work. So this is what you're doing. You're
yes.
kind of just, you know, white knuckling it through all these steps and just
mm-hmm.
kind of beating on it. And well, but you eventually get it, right?
I mean, do we ever really get it? I'm still recovering, and I think it's arrogant to say otherwise. But I eventually start to practice it, yes.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
I start to see my part in things, and I start to see how much of a blessing it is to be able to ask, what can I do to make it right to someone I just wronged? And it's just amazing. I remember the first time I ever did that, I was really blown away at how good it felt and how much grace I was given. And just by listening to my sponsor and figuring out how to be a good person and just figuring out how to stop being a bad person.
You know
what's
really
weird? Then my life got better.
Is sometimes we have thoughts like, what would a good person do?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm gonna think about, and then I'm going to do that.
But I think that happens because we know what a good person would do.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I've heard it said that we really do, before we do anything bad, there is something in us innately that says this isn't right. There's something there every time. You know, I don't know. I just believe in that. I do.
I think for me it was being true to thyself, like it says, as far as knowing what I actually want to say and what I mean. Before I would react on fear and self-centeredness. Now I know to pause, talk to my higher power, and say exactly what I mean and what I want to say. And that is what has given me such a great life today.
Right. That's where the growth lies. Now, do you work with other people now?
Yes.
Nice.
I've sponsored women, and I go to speak at a rehab on Friday nights.
Nice. Awesome. And you've gotten the rewards of service work.
Yes.
How it gets you out of yourself.
For sure. And just how I get to see their unmanageability and see my own in that and see the insanity.
That you were that way.
And just, yeah, it's so evident when you're working with someone to see where we can do the work and how easy it is if we just do it.
You know, we haven't had a lot of guests that have delved deeply into the step work like you. And I think that's really good for people to hear, especially when you're talking about 6 and 7.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, I used to refer to those as the flyover steps.
Mm-mm.
You know, but no, they're not. But no. I mean, for a lot of people, it's like, oh, yeah, I'll ask them. Yeah, I'll give up my character.
I just have to sit by myself for an hour and make sure I do the stuff.
Right. So that's, you know, that's for a lot of people, that's hard to do. And it's very important to take time.
Oh, it's huge.
You know, and talk a lot about it and stuff like that. So we are at the end of our time here, and we want to thank you for coming in and sharing
and
your story.
I appreciate the brutal honesty.
Yes. We love that stuff.
That's good stuff, for sure.
Thanks for having me.
So until next time, I'm Mark.
I'm Brett.
I'm Allison.
As we wrap up another episode of the Glum Lot Podcast, we want to extend our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in today. Navigating the path to recovery from alcohol and other substances is a journey filled with challenges, triumphs, and self-discovery. Remember, we're not affiliated with Alcoholics Anonymous, but we're here to provide a safe space for open conversations about the complexities of recovery. Your stories, courage, and resilience inspire us and our listeners alike. If you or someone you know is on the transformative journey, know that you're not alone. Join us next time as we continue to explore the diverse facets of recovery. Until then, stay strong, stay connected, and remember that each day is a step towards a brighter, sober tomorrow. Thank you for being part of the Glum Lot community.